Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Talk Radio. Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio, the world headquarters of common sense, the centre of the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. Incredibly, we discover this morning that the Liverpool bomber was being housed in an asylum hostel at taxpayers' expense run by Serco. That's right, the private company that is making millions from the illegal immigration business thanks to a host of government contracts, from transporting the arrivals on coaches to housing them in hotels up and down the country. It beggars belief, does it not, that someone whose asylum claim was rejected in 2014 could still be living in this country, let alone being sponsored to be here, while he plotted the murder of hundreds of innocent people last weekend on Remembrance Sunday. Even the Home Secretary Priti Patel has admitted that the system has become a merry-go-round, with the government being powerless to stop the massed hordes of new arrivals every single day on our shores. Only yesterday, Priti Patel told us that she was having talks with her counterpart in France to make sure that it all comes to an end. We're sick of hearing it. What we want is an actual end to it, an actual proper identification process by which we can say to these people, if you come here illegally, you will be turned away, you will not be allowed in, you will certainly not be living in a hostel 7 years after we've told you that you cannot get asylum here. For heaven's sake, this morning we're joined by Baroness Hoey. She will have plenty to say about the new terror threat, and I'll be asking her about the new Boris Johnson policy that MPs will be barred from having second jobs. How on earth is he going to make that work? Because I can't see it, to be honest. I'll also be asking her what she makes of Sajid Javid's extraordinary tweet last night to one of our regular listeners, one David Atherton, who questioned the government's policies on booster jabs. According to the Secretary of State for Health, we should just show some respect to the NHS without question. I don't think so, Mr. Stabbit Jabbit. He said, so what? Just respect the NHS. Is that the kind of language the Secretary of State for Health should be using? I don't think so. 03444991000. Coming up, it's the return of Prime Minister's questions, and no doubt Boris will be attacked for his U-turn on the second jobs decision and the continuing story of Tory sleaze, although I'm not sure it's cutting through to the public. Our political editor Peter Caldwell joins us for that. And Tonya Buxton is here as well. She's had an interesting week, which included being slagged off by a broadcaster from another place over booster jabs and vaccinations. Some people will never learn that we do not want to live in a two-tiered society. Tony's also got plenty to say about obese children and the latest NHS policy to sort them out. As ever, of course, we need to hear from you. What are you seeing out there and what are you being told? 0344 499 1000. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, let us, without further ado, say a very warm welcome to Baroness Kate Hoey. Kate, lovely to see you. Thank you very much for coming into the studio. And welcome.
Well, it's very nice to be here again and look out at this lovely view you've got.
Isn't it beautiful? And it's such a nice day as well, notwithstanding the COP26 climate change emergency.
Please, could we not go there?
No, I'd rather not. And I think we've dispatched that into the midst of time. Yeah. Although I was pleased to see they had an earthquake in Glasgow after they left, which pretty much goes to show they can't really change much, can they?
I heard that about there, correct? Yeah, because it was felt over in Northern Ireland too, in Ballycastle.
Really? Yes. Absolutely amazing. Now, you're back in London. Let's talk a bit about Serco, because the story that I want to get into this morning is the revelation, incredible revelation that came out late last night, that this bomber, whose name I do not wish to mention, so I'm not going to name him at all, apparently was living in a hostel, which was an asylum seekers hostel in Liverpool, paid for by the government, paid for by the taxpayer, run by Serco, which is this private company run by the brother of Nicholas Soames, I believe, And it just beggars belief that a man whose asylum claim or attempted sort of, you know, application was turned down 7 years ago is still living in this country at our expense.
Well, I remember way back, and I can't, I'm trying to think which Prime Minister it was under, when the Home Secretary said the Home Office wasn't fit for purpose and the whole immigration system wasn't fit for purpose. And I think that's still today in 2021 just as bad as ever. And the idea that you can be told that you're not an asylum seeker, and presumably the court said at the time that, you know, he should be deported, and it hasn't happened, shows there is a huge, huge problem there. And we just don't know the figures of how many other people. I don't know whether the Home Office has come out and stated it. They won't want to, because they won't want people to know just how many people it is. Right. And it is really quite shocking, but also, you know, quite frightening in a way, because now we know that there are all these people here, and many of them, of course, have become radicalised if they weren't at, you know, when they came here.
And we're
first.
Now being told it was lockdown that somehow managed to get them radicalised, which I find quite hard to believe. I mean, you're not going to just get radicalised because you're sitting at home, are you?
No. Well, I suppose the argument really, you're watching, you're seeing more, you know, if the internet and able to have discussions with other people and that kind of communication. But, you know, all of that is kind of froth and excuses. Yeah. What we've got to have is a situation where we can actually deport people who are genuine. Because the problem for me was, and I had a very busy constituency surgery of people with immigration problems. The problem is that the unlawful asylum seekers actually do down the genuine asylum seeker, because people in the country then, you know, put everybody together. And actually there are some really, you know, there are some genuine people who have fled for their lives.
I'm sure there are.
But they should be treated absolutely
in the same way that we've brought people outside of Afghanistan for whatever reason. They may have worked with British forces. Some of them may have even been working as
Hong Kong.
Part of
we're
British
going to
forces.
Take lots of people
exactly.
from Hong Kong.
But unfortunately, what it does is it makes people who are obviously people living in this country, it makes them sort of feel as though we are being invaded by this sort of foreign force of people who are all the same sort of homogenous group, and they're not.
Yes, and of course what we're seeing, I mean, the whole Dover situation is particularly shocking, because we are seeing then what's happening, that they are being taken, many of them after being in their hotel locally, they're being taken off up to mainly northern towns, like, well, Midlands and Northern, and then taking accommodation there. And those communities are soon going to start feeling very, you know, threatens too strong a word, but they're certainly going to feel that their communities are changing, and they have not been asked in any way do they want that to happen. So the whole Dover issue, coupled with what's happened at the weekend with that terrible bomb, you know, atrocity really, and we'd no idea whether he was aiming for the hospital or whether he was going on to go to the cathedral, which apparently he'd been
Well, that's another weird thing, which is a story that was written apparently in 2016, but it kind of passed me by, that apparently a lot of these asylum seekers claim to be committed to Christianity, and they ask to be converted to Christianity because it apparently helps their cause. I mean, surely we must be able to see through this stuff.
Well, you'd think the Church of England ministers who on the whole would be the people who would be accepting them into their faith would actually be a little bit more cynical, perhaps.
You would think.
But I'm afraid there is a kind of almost acceptance, you know, that anyone.
There's a missionary zeal, isn't
yes,
there?
Yes, anyone.
Oh, isn't it great? Look at all these Muslim young men wanting to come and become Christians. And you go, really?
Yeah, well, you would think that. But then, I mean, we you know, we have a kind of very, very, what I would call liberal establishment running the Church of England. And
well, we've got a very liberal establishment running the entire country. I mean, that's what worries me. I mean, I heard a woman from the House of Lords, and I forgive me for not knowing her name, but she said, quite with a straight face on a radio station I was listening to, well, the thing is, a lot of these young men come from very violent places, and, you know, you have to forgive them for being violent, effectively, and that, you know, some of them have a different relationship with violence than we do. And I'm going, yeah, well, shouldn't that be a reason to say, actually, sorry, you can't come in?
No, I've heard some very, very interesting views since I've been in the House of Lords from people who you would have thought would actually know better about reality, but many of them are actually cut off from reality, what it's like on the ground. And, you know, and I think, you know, our country is so tolerant. We really are a tolerant country. And, you know, you talk to any sort of taxi driver in London, you know, in a minicab who's from another country and has come here, they all will say, you know, how welcome they've felt and how grateful they
and
are.
And why they want to be here in the first place.
And they themselves get very annoyed at some of these people coming in who are just abusing the system as they are in Dover.
And, of course, you also said, well, luckily this sort of thing that happens, like the thing that happened in Liverpool, is a very rare occurrence, which is true. And I know that, you know, of the 20-odd thousand that have come already this year on the dinghies, you could probably count on one hand the numbers of those who might cause harm to people. But nevertheless, they're being imported, and five is more than zero, and five is too many. We've got plenty of maniacs in this country that we've grown by ourselves, thanks very much. We don't need to import any.
The other thing, of course, the Home Office say, but it's then it's their own fault for not doing something about it, that when they do try to deport people, literally the plane is sitting full of people who are being sent back somewhere, and then the lawyers get involved, making a lot of money, our lawyers, out of this, and they go in and take an action which means that the plane has to go off with very few people on it.
Yes.
And of course that's all part of the Human Rights Act, which
I think the government was
committed to looking at it, but I haven't seen much.
Well, it's a bit confusing, isn't it? Because Brexit, as we will get onto, I'm sure, was supposed to be the end of our hegemony with the EU. They weren't supposed to be able to tell us how we could run our country anymore, and yet we still appear to be signed up to the European Court
of
Human
Rights
in some way, shape, or form.
It covers other countries as well, and it's a general thing. But yes, I mean, I think it does need, because the aim of it was to speed up people being able to appeal issues. But I think, you know, we should be able to do that in our own country, and I would very much like us to, the government, to look at that seriously again, because it stops all sorts of things and causes us to have to do certain things that we wouldn't do in a normal situation.
Right. Well, isn't it interesting as well that the EU, looking to the east, where they see the border troubles between Poland and Belarus, say that those are not proper migrants, apparently, according to the EU, and therefore they're not allowed into the European Union because they've been somehow siphoned in to Belarus by Vladimir Putin, playing a sort of Pied Piper of Hamelin trick and getting them all to turn up. But, of course, the ones that are coming here from France are perfectly legitimate.
The hypocrisy of the European Union on it has been been unbelievable, really. And then what's interesting, of course, we've apparently sent some of our own troops out to help the Polish authorities.
What, to keep them out?
I'm not sure. I don't think not very many, but we've certainly sent, and that would be, seem to me, you know, we should be getting our own priorities. I think the argument there is that, of course, if those people do get through into Poland, they're not going to stop in Poland.
Of course not.
They're not going to stop in Italy. They're not going to stop wherever
they'll be in Eastbourne in about 2 weeks.
Maybe three.
But that's the thing. I mean, how is it that we have got this situation which Priti Patel seems powerless to prevent? I know that you've done some work in the whole immigration business. You've worked in various different capacities with the Border Force in the past. I mean, what can we do to stop it?
Well, I think legally, you know, they will produce all sorts of legal reasons why we can't turn the boats round. Obviously, there is the law of the sea, where if a boat is in distress, then it's clearly they have to be rescued. But what I did actually visit the whole border control area in Dover the other week with two or three other members of parliament from red wall seats, actually, who were very, very interested, because their constituencies are being literally filled up with people coming from Dover. And it was an eye-opener and quite shocking. I've got a debate in the House of Lords next week on the issue, because what I saw was, I mean, it's so obvious that the pull factor is huge now. I mean, I don't think anyone wants people who do come in to be treated in any way inhumanely.
No, but equally, by the same token, we also want to know what they're doing coming here, who they're being
They all, 99.9% of them, when asked, why have you come, they all can speak English enough to say they're claiming asylum.
Right.
And the other thing that's happening, which is interesting, the people who used to, you know, get the boats for them, the people who are making a lot of money out of this, now, because the communication system between those who've come here and those who are still on the beaches and over in France, the communication is very good, and they know what to say, they know how to handle things. And what they've been doing is, apparently, we were told by Border Force, more and more of them are clubbing together, finding a way of getting their own little boat and coming across, which is why we saw some really ridiculous little dinghy type things that you'd almost see children playing around in.
But those are still in the minority. Because most of them, it would seem to me, are being trafficked. Most of them seemingly are paying a fair amount of money, or at least but put themselves in debt in order to get here, which suggests that they're probably going to be working in the black economy. They're probably going to be working for criminal organisations, and they're probably somehow contributing to the enrichment of human traffickers.
Yes, and this is where I think the French authorities are absolutely failing. And it's very clear that they are very happy to have them passed on to us. Mm. And they're getting all that money from us. And yet they haven't been able to tackle it in any serious way. They do find
they claim that they're stopping some from coming, but they're clearly not doing enough. And also this business of rescuing, I mean, this used to happen in the Mediterranean, whereas as long as you set sail from Tripoli in a boat and got 10 feet offshore, the charity boats would rescue you.
Well, that's
Save the Children people and the sort of Oxfam boats would go, you're in the water, we'll pick you up.
Well, the RNLI is almost full time doing that now. And of course, what happens is the French communicate with our border force and say there's a boat just coming over. Mm. And, they go out. And I think so people over there know that unless it's really horrendous conditions, they're going to be pretty much picked up as soon as they get anywhere.
And so what do the Border Force guys say about what they would like to be able to do? What would their powers be?
Well, it's very interesting because obviously they, publicly they'll say they follow the line, but privately some of them were making it very clear that they think the whole thing has just gone out of hand.
It's
and of course
fiasco.
They are working extremely hard. And even the people who are going out on the boats are exhausted because it's happening all through the night now as well.
Well, it's a business now. I mean, there's no doubt in anybody's mind. I mean, these guys are making millions of pounds a week by trafficking these people into this country. We're looking at probably 30,000 by the end of the year because the season hasn't stopped them. We're also now being told that next year, if it doesn't stop, they'll be getting the bigger boats that they used to use in the Mediterranean. So they'll be arriving in their hundreds rather than in their dozens.
And in order to do that, we also visited the big new, huge big building that £3 million is being spent to create a better place for them to be treated when they arrive. Because at the moment it is a bit of sheds here and porta cabins.
Well, it's still better than the sort of jungle of Calais, though, isn't it?
But you should see the nice place that's now going to be there. Absolutely top of the range showers and all that kind of thing.
And this is the thing.
It's very sad, really, because, you see all these, and they're predominantly young.
Yeah, they're predominantly young men, aren't they?
Young men. Most boats have one family in it sometimes, or one child or something. There's definitely a cleverness about how they do it, the people who are running this. They know that if they put a family in the boat, it gives, it looks better.
It looks better, and then they can tell, somebody to come and take a picture and everybody...
I think Priti Patel, I mean, I don't know whether she's being held back by, within... The Home Office has always been a very, very slow to do things and very keen not to... look like they're in any way being hostile.
It really is extraordinary.
It can't go on.
No,
it really
mustn't go on. And the big question, which I'm going to ask you to answer in a minute, because we're going to take a little break, is, where are they all going? And where are they all ending up? And that's the question I think a lot of people are asking and wondering about. Kate Hoey's with us here, Baroness Hoey now, of course, from Lyle Hill and Rathlin. We're going to find out more about the migrant problem. What is going on? And coming up in a little while, we'll talk about Serco as well, which is the government contractor, which basically gets given free money by the government to take care of all these people. It's an absolute merry-go-round, as Priti Patel has said.
This is Talk Radio across the UK, online, on DAB+, and on the Talk Radio app. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We've got Baroness Hoey with us. And of course, I can't have you sitting here, Kate, without asking you about the Northern Ireland Protocol, the fishing dispute, Lord Frost and the Brexit negotiations. What's the latest?
Well, Lord Frost's in Northern Ireland today, actually. Mm. And then he's going back to do questions tomorrow in the Lords, which he'll get quite a few interesting questions about the protocol and fishing. And then on Friday, he goes back to Brussels. Mm. And I'm hoping... But, maybe just me being hopeful that Friday could be, they finally say, look, enough's enough.
Right.
The EU have given a bit, but it's all candy floss.
You've always maintained that they could easily solve it tomorrow if they wanted to.
Well, they could, because actually just a couple of weeks ago, the Republic of Ireland government announced that because of its emphasis on green policies now, they were going to stop be able to check solid fuel going over the border between the Northern Ireland and the Republic to check that it had the same, the level of whatever
it
is.
It's rubbish, isn't it?
I know. Well, it just showed that when they want to, they recognise as a border, you know. So I think, Lord, I think we've had enough talking about it all now. The EU is never going to give up on the European Court of Justice. And while Northern Ireland is left under EU Court of Justice and EU rules, then the United Kingdom is not... you know, is being...
I mean, do you think this will just drag on into perpetuity, that Northern Ireland will continue to remain a place which is kind of in both camps, really?
Yes, I think that's what, you know, some people probably even in our Foreign Office would be sort of saying, oh, well, look, it's fine.
As long as it's kind of bumping
along. As long as people aren't out... you know, planting bombs, particularly on Great Britain.
Right. Although there have been a few incidents, haven't there? There have been a few incidents. Where buses have been hijacked and set on fire and that kind of thing.
And there's been a lot of community people, you know, genuinely trying to stop unrest. But, you know, that can't continue. Things will come to a head. And, the party gave, some of the unionist parties gave Frost another month or so. And time's running out now. Really, we need to get that Article 16 invoked.
Right.
And then that allows for more discussion. Although I think if we do invoke Article 16, the EU are saying that, you know, that could bring about a trade war and all of this.
Yeah.
Article 16 is in the agreement. So why was it put in if the EU
are
now
saying
it's the end of the
world? It's not in anybody's interest to have a trade war. I don't believe those scaremongering stories. There's not going to be a trade war. The French want us as much as we want to be able to export into the EU. Why would you bother having a row about it?
But isn't it interesting about all those scare stories that we used to hear day in, day out during the referendum campaign and afterwards, and yet we've seen, you know, the Shell story recently and all sorts of good news that even
Royal
the BBC,
and Dutch.
Even the BBC has to sometimes mention it.
They do. They don't like it, though. Finally, I suppose it brings us back to Boris Johnson. Boris Johnson having a bit of a rocky time, I would say, at the moment. I feel as though he's being very much distracted all the time now by something. I don't know what it is, but, you know, it seems as though every policy he has a kind of shelf life of 24 hours. And then he changes it. You know, today we're going to have PMQs. As a result of having PMQs, he appears to have had this ridiculous kind of road to Damascus conversion about second jobs for MPs. Going to ban them. You can't really, can you? How can you ban them?
It's he obviously wanted to outdo what Keir Starmer was going to say yesterday, and now of course there's a dispute about which policy is stronger.
So he can say, "Well, we're already doing it."
The reality is that it's going to be extremely difficult to monitor. Our MPs going to fill in timesheets and things.
Right.
I mean, some people might say they should, but I mean, my view is that as long as ultimately, it's the constituents have to judge. Is their MP being taken away so much by all this work that they're not doing their normal job? The amount of money is almost immaterial. It's the amount of time that they spend.
I think so. I mean, Geoffrey Cox is a very clever guy. If he can make £1 million a minute by being able to give advice to the Virgin Islands, then good luck to him.
Well, he's probably employing a lot more staff as well. Then
right.
You see that help. But I think MPs. What I don't want to end up is a thing where it says, well, no MP can work unless you're doing something that somebody somewhere up here in the establishment considers to be a good second job, i.e. being able to be a lawyer, for example, do some legal work or do some, go into a hospital for a few hours a week or a few hours a month to keep. I mean, that I think it should be a full time job. But, you know, if somebody wants to do that and their constituents know, as long as it's open and transparent, they should have to declare it.
Right.
But just it's so easy to say, oh, ban them all to doing second jobs.
And also you can't really do it, because what does that mean? So when it means if you were an MP and
we came to this would be being a second job, although I'm not paid.
Well, but what if we said to you, would you like to come in and do a radio show and for which we will pay you? Are you not allowed to do that? I mean, it's good news for people who don't like listening to David Lammy, I suppose.
Well,
he might get banned from being on the airwaves, which probably wouldn't make that much difference to the world. But I just find it bizarre that, if you get asked to write a piece for the Daily Telegraph, is that a second job or is that allowable?
I think
you can't do it, can you?
It's a typical, I'm afraid, as a politician, former politician, still a politician, but it's a typical reaction to something where there is, a public outroar. You immediately say something very quickly that sounds good.
Right.
When it comes to the detail, no one's got the detail. It won't work probably at all. And what's going to happen is it could drive out a lot of very good members of Parliament.
And like many rules in Parliament,
many
rules in Parliament, which have happened before, where they've changed the rules, they've allowed previous incumbents to do what they want. So, for example, you're not now supposed to employ your spouse as a member of your staff, but if you already did, that's fine. And that's the way it works. And so it's kind of hypocritical anyway.
The whole thing is riddled with inconsistencies. Yeah. And ultimately, I think you have to hope that MPs do what they think is right. And their
that's
constituents,
the trouble, isn't it?
You know, it's,
it because is. Some will do the right thing yeah. and some won't.
And everyone then gets branded yeah. by the few. But I'm not sure the either of those two announcements will sort things out in a satisfactory way. And I'm not sure anyone really has the answers other than, you know, I just don't think you can make it absolutely impossible for an MP to do something else.
No, because it's not black and white, like most things, unfortunately. Kate, lovely to see you. Thank you so much for coming in. Baroness Kate Hoey, of course, visiting us, as we should be very happy to see her. We'll see her again soon. Lots to talk about, though, coming up. What's going on with Serco? What is going on with the asylum business? What is going on with Priti Patel? Why is she not able to stop what is happening? And what about Boris Johnson? Is he just sort of treading water now? Is he just biding his time until somebody comes along that might be more popular than him? Who knows? This is Talk Radio.
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham. On Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. We've got lots to do, lots to talk about. The Liverpool bomber was apparently living in a hostel, a halfway hostel, 7 years after his asylum claim was turned down. He was being paid for by the taxpayer in a housing facility which was basically created by Serco, the company, the private company, which is making millions from the illegal migrant problem. Before we forget, let's tell you that you can also watch us on television. You can watch us on Apple TV, Rakuten, Samsung TV Plus, Roku, YouTube, and now Amazon Fire TV as well. It's on the lot. Basically, go to the talkradio.tv page or simply download the Talk Radio TV app from the App Store, and you can watch us all the way through the day. Jeremy Carl from 4, Ian Collins from 1, Kevin O'Sullivan from 7, James Well from 10, and all the way through to James Max and Julie Hartley Brewer in the morning. Right now, though, let's talk to Martin Daubeny, Deputy Leader of the Reclaim Party, because I think he will be as incredulous as I am this morning to discover that Serco are not only still making millions out of the asylum business, but they're still housing people who have had their asylum claims turned down seven years ago. Martin, very good morning to you.
Morning, Mike, and thank you once again for being one of the sole voice of common sense in an increasingly insane world. But let me tell you what, Mike, I'm not surprised about this.
It's shocking, though, isn't it?
Yeah, this is absolutely shocking. It's grotesque, but it's symptomatic of a broken system, a system that's completely unfit for purpose. This government has completely lost control of illegal immigration, full stop. Look at the front page of the papers today. Immigrants pouring in on dinghies, laughing their heads off like they've won a game show, because of course they have won a game show when they get to the UK. They're gifted with free housing, with pizzas, with mobile phones, and they're welcomed by a political establishment which sees immigration, even illegal immigration, as only a good thing. And then 6,000 people who have failed their asylum process, like this gentleman who repeatedly lied where he came from, about his system, his background, his origin, and 6,000 of those people are still being kept by the taxpayer in protected accommodation at full expense. Yeah. We're paying this bill, Mike. All of us are paying this bill. And you know what? I was out in North Shropshire yesterday. There's a by-election coming up, talking to people up there about what they make of this. And the voters are appalled by what's going on.
Yeah.
In 2016, we voted to take back control of our borders. Now it's worse than ever. And the asylum system is completely broken and unfit for purpose. And the Home Secretary, pitiful Patel, I think she'd resign.
Yeah, I mean, she keeps coming out unbelievably, only yesterday, saying, oh, I've been talking to my French counterpart. I mean, one of my Twitter followers said, did he burst out laughing when you first said to him, you know, we must do something about this? Because they are just laughing at us now. I mean, we've got a situation where this guy walks in. I mean, I don't even know if he came in on a dinghy 7 or 8 years ago. He may well have done, because they were still doing it in those days, or in the back of a lorry or something like that. But it beggars belief, doesn't it, that not only, I mean, it'd be one thing if he was kind of secreting himself away, but no, he was hiding in plain sight, being paid for by the taxpayer, Serco still making money off of him, millions and millions of pounds every single year. It's extraordinary.
Yeah, and I think it's just, again, it's just symptomatic. This guy is just the one we know about. It's happening all over the place. Yesterday, Priti Patel said she would, quote, 100% stop illegal immigration. Mm. Yesterday, 1,000 illegal immigrants poured into the UK. So she was right, yeah, but by a factor of 10.
Right.
She's completely lost the plot on this.
I know.
And the trouble is, who's in control of the country? Emmanuel Macron, the French Navy, Border Force.
ISIS.
And when they get here, who's in charge? ISIS. And who's in charge of sending them back? Because there's a feeling that the government has been led by the nose by human rights lawyers, by activists, by celebrities, by hashtag refugee welcome, by a political establishment that's completely impotent and lost its teeth on this issue, and they won't speak out for fear of becoming racist. And what happens is, like, the worst that can happen is what's happened in Liverpool. Gamed the system, cheated, lied, tried to get deported, couldn't get him out, and tried to bomb a maternity ward. Mike, it's grotesque.
Yeah. And what about this story as well, Martin, that we discovered from a few years ago? I must admit, I didn't notice it a few years ago. I broke it in the Sunday Times, I think. Now, an awful lot of asylum seekers actually actively pretend to want to become Christian in order to get more points to become a successful asylum seeker, because apparently if you're a Christian, you're all right. I mean, how stupid are these people?
Yeah, I remember covering this story back in 2016. This is back in the Brexit referendum days. I covered this on Sky News. It came to light. Basically, they were gaming the system, converting to Christianity, because that gave them protected status. Because if they were sent back to a welcoming, tolerant, inclusive society which they came from, they were at risk of being persecuted or worse, because Christianity is a punishable offence.
Yeah.
So they were converting to Christianity and then just disappearing. 200 we know about, Iranians, just at Liverpool Cathedral, where this bloke went and saw the light to go to Christianity. And that's one place, just the ones we know about. This is cheating, it's gaming the system, it's playing the system, and we should shine a light on this.
I'm absolutely right. And I'm sorry to say, the Happy Clappy Brigade, you know, who Mr. and Mrs., you know, cosy tea time at 4 p.m. For all people who are coming here from terribly violent Muslim countries, because we ought to be a Christian, you must be fine. I mean, you know, do get yourselves an education in the real world and stop pretending that you're going to put your arms around somebody who's literally strapped to a suicide belt.
Yeah, and did you notice, Mike, how gleefully the mainstream media were reporting the fact this guy had converted to Christianity, almost as if, see, he's a good guy.
So it's nothing to do with Islam then, right?
Precisely. So it's not only a way of dodging and gaming the immigration and asylum system, but it's a way of getting media protection, because the media don't seem to take the side of the electorate, who are rightly concerned this is spiralling out of control. I think the government have lost control on this completely.
Well, listen...
And the My
favourite phrase of the moment, Martin, and I'm sure you'll join me in laughing at this with some hilarity, certain media organisations still referring to the bloke who blew himself up as the suspected bomber. And I'm going, there's nothing suspected about it. He blew himself up with his own detonating device. I mean, I don't think there's anything suspected about that, is there?
You don't have to be Poirot to work this one out, Mike, but we know that what's going on here.
I mean, it begs belief, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost funny, but again, it's symptomatic of a media that would rather bury its head in the sand and put things in inverted commas, dodge the real issue, make it about something else, because they haven't got the guts, they haven't got the spine to tackle this issue, the same as our politicians, and the public are completely fed up with it, Mike.
They really are. And the big question for me, Martin, is how many more Liverpool bombers are there? Where are they all staying, right? How many more of these hostels do we have around the country? Because we know, just from people that tell us stuff anecdotally on the radio, that there's loads of hotels up and down the country that you can't book a room in. Guess what? Yep. They're full of asylum seekers.
Yeah, you know, one of the most heartbreaking stories that I found when I was campaigning to be an MEP for the Brexit Party in May 2019 was I went to Wolverhampton and I met a homeless veteran who was having a meal in Wetherspoons with his wife. And he told me he was about to be evicted from his hotel where he was kept because asylum seekers had moved in and taken his room. And I was utterly heartbroken. I held his hand and I bought him a drink. And it really, really struck home that one anecdote of really where this country's priorities lie and what's happening. And why don't we take care of our home? Charity should begin at home. And when we do things like this and the system is abused, I think the public have rightfully got mind to say, this has to stop.
It really does. And I'm just, as we speak, reading the latest breaking news in which it says that the terrorist, whose name I refuse to use, by the way,
same here,
basically spent 7 months buying bomb parts before the event last Sunday. And, you know, I have all sympathies with the security services because they have the hardest job of all to try and keep track of these scumbags. But, you know, it's time to stop. It's time to stop importing terror, isn't it?
Yeah, isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing how you get a knock at your door if you send an offensive tweet, or if you're transphobic, or if you offend,
well,
you know,
your friend of mine, Lawrence Fox, gets regularly knocked up by the police who want to know what he's doing and where he's going and whether he's going to be outside without a mask on.
Yeah, and the police have a lot of time to police tweets when they should be policing the streets. They have a lot of time to knock on doors to check if you're quarantined, but they can't detect a suicide bomber who's been quietly building bombs for 7 years off parts that you or I could buy off Amazon. Yeah. We've got this completely wrong, Mike. Mm. We're applying law and order where it shouldn't be applied, and we're ignoring criminals in plain view. We have to have a deep reset on the system. I really hope the by-election in North Shropshire gives the public a chance to say enough is enough, and give Westminster and give the Tories a bloody nose.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Great to talk to you, Martin. See you soon. We must have a drink before Christmas because, of course, it might get cancelled, not by Boris Johnson, but by the Church of England. Martin Daubley, Deputy Leader of the Reclaim Party, quite rightly saying, it's time to stop importing terror, isn't it? I'm sick to death of hearing all these lefties going, oh, are you against immigration? No, I'm not against immigration, but I'll tell you what I'm against. I'm against importing nutters from far left countries, from places where Muslim fundamentalists treat them like scum and make them want to kill people. That's what I'm against. Is there anything wrong with that?
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
I don't know what's got into me today, but I'm feeling a bit feisty.
That Tony was Buxton galvanizing.
Listen, that's how I feel, though. Yeah. How dare Sajid Javid start slagging off my listeners because they ask a question about his policy about jabbing people three times instead of twice?
I think what the problem with politicians across the board, whether it be Labour or Lib Dem or Conservatives or whatever, is that they've forgotten that they are there to serve.
Yes.
They are there to serve. And I don't know where they get off being so impolite, being so rude and answering things like that. We have genuine questions.
Yeah.
We are genuinely worried about what's going on. And so if somebody's worried about something that they're going to put into their body,
right,
why can't they ask that question? And the whole thing with the NHS, as you know, which I intend to go into a lot more next week, but this week, is that the NHS is failing.
Mm.
And it's been failing for many years.
Right.
And he doesn't respect the NHS because he's sacking all those wonderful people that we were clapping for during the pandemic. We are not in a pandemic now. It's over. It's endemic. Let's get that out there for sure.
Mm.
And all all those wonderful people that risked their lives and went in and worked, and most of them got COVID whilst they was there, so they've all got natural immunity, right. A whole load of them.
He doesn't like to talk about that.
He sacked them. He sacked them.
Right.
So who should be respecting the NHS? Is the NHS just this big body, or is it the people within it?
Maybe
the
he
real people.
It.
He needs to respect the people that work in it, not the middlemen that get these huge wages. What were the wages? 7 jobs or 8 jobs for over a quarter of a million to do what exactly?
I know.
These people need to go. It needs restructuring. I'm happy to take the job on. Yeah. I will take the job on of restructuring
well,
the
listen,
NHS.
Well, listen, anyone with an ounce of common sense and an ability to organise anything, including either your home or a school or a company or a restaurant, you know, anyone with any brains could sort the NHS out like that.
Yeah.
Because it's clearly overburdened with red tape. It's overburdened with managers. There's too many people who do nothing and who are paid loads of money to do nothing.
And Big Pharma has too much of an input
and also,
in what goes on
also,
in the NHS.
In what world, right? If you imagine if you owned the biggest restaurant chain in Britain, right, and you were buying aubergines. Wouldn't you pay bottom dollar for aubergines rather than top dollar because
Absolutely,
you're buying so many?
Because you're buying so many.
But in the NHS, when you buy the most drugs of any organisation in the entire world, you pay them the maximum
That's
as opposed to the minimum. What's going on?
It's Big Pharma. A lot of them are conflicted. There's lots of confliction going on there, and it's really not on. It has to be looked at with, you know, with a microscope as to what's going on and how we can clean it up because it's dirty. The NHS is dirty.
We saw our good friend Matt Hancock, who still thinks that people care about him, and apparently who says he walks around Britain and people go up to him and go, "Thank you so much for saving the NHS." Is this guy deluded or what? Is he sure he didn't dream
that?
I think he is.
He's completely insane.
He's writing a book about how he saved the NHS, apparently, except the publishers say, well, we haven't asked him to. I mean, the guy literally is
he's nuts.
Such a crazy narcissist that
he
thinks things are going on that aren't happening.
He makes things up. He makes things up to give himself... I mean, but, you know, all the talk that I've had about Matt Hancock, and I've spoken to a lot of people that do know him, is that he is fundamentally a very dim man.
Right.
And that begs the question...
He doesn't look bright, does he?
He doesn't look bright, but he is actually very dim. And that begs the question, how did he get that job?
Well, that's a very good question. How do you get any job in politics? Mm. By sucking up to the right people.
Right.
And how on earth would you think that Boris Johnson became Prime Minister, given what we now know about him,
Absolutely.
And given what we now know that he has the attention span of a gnat?
Yep.
And literally, if you wave something at him for 24 minutes, he goes over there. You know, he can't concentrate on anything.
So you and I will never be in politics because we don't have the capacity to suck up.
Well, I
that's
personally couldn't
thing.
Be in politics because of all the skeletons in my cupboard, but that's another story. I wouldn't want anyone knowing about. But let's talk about a couple of other things before we move on to that. Obesity in children, I know, is a big issue for you. One of the things the NHS is doing wrong is they suddenly announce in the middle of all this, never mind fixing the GP problem or the problem with cancer care, instead, what we're going to do is we're going to set up a load of obesity clinics for two-year-olds.
I tell you what, it's just to try and get your eye off the ball. So I was a school teacher 20 years ago in Tottenham, and we had an obesity problem then.
Right.
And that was 20 years ago. And again and again and again, I've written to my MP and I've written to whoever will listen to me to talk about obesity in children. Because this is what people don't understand. And you might understand it a little bit more now because of what happened with COVID.
Yeah.
Is that having excess weight leads to a plethora of health issues. Okay, so even a little bit of excess weight leads to a plethora of health issues. I put on 8 pounds over lockdown because I was eating too much. And I tell you, it's really hard to lose it.
Especially as you get older.
Yes, we're not talking about the older world now.
Sorry.
But I mean myself.
You know, I gave up smoking 4 years ago
and
I put on about 1.5 stone.
And it's really hard.
And, you know, it's so very difficult.
It is hard to get your weight in control. So I get that. So I'm not unsympathetic. So let's get that out first before people say to me that I'm unsympathetic. I get how difficult it is. But when it comes to children, it is our duty. Our duty as adults, as parents, to make sure that they don't get fat. Now, the statistics that came out yesterday, and I've got to read these out because they're horrific. It says that 25% of primary school children are obese. Mm. I mean, and that comes up to 41% of children are either overweight or obese.
Is there a danger, though, with the word obese? Because I know that there was a time when my children were younger and they put them on this kind of, you know, sliding scale. And all children grow at different rates, right?
Yeah.
And a couple of my kids grew quicker than others.
Yes.
And they can say to you, and we had a couple of letters about the fact that, you know, we're raising some concerns about one of your children. And I was like, well, hang on a minute, there's nothing wrong with any of my kids. They just happen to be growing at a slightly different rate.
Maybe there's some things they do get it wrong a little bit along the way. But the reality is all you need to go is look into a classroom now.
Yeah.
Children, the fact of the matter is that four-year-olds are arriving at reception, 35% of them are overweight or obese.
Okay.
And my point is forget about, oh, you mustn't shame them and watch their feelings or whatever. The likelihood that they're going to end up with type 2 diabetes, and if you end up being overweight, you have liver problems, yeah, you have metabolic problems, you have fertility problems, mm, and it can cause cancer.
Sure.
So if you're taking your child to school already overweight, and then What drives me nuts so much, let me just go back, is the stuff that's at schools. I mean, now they're trying to come down it, but school food is disgusting. Mm. It's beige food with absolutely no nutrients in it.
I read that it's gone back to terrible stuff since the lockdown, right?
It's terrible. When I was at school, our school lunches at primary school were incredible. Mm. Pretty disgusting to eat, I don't care about that. But there were greens, there was protein, there was carbohydrate. Yeah. It was a well-balanced meal.
I loved my school dinners.
Some of them were awful.
No, I always liked them, and I still, even to this day, would love it for somebody to make me chocolate custard, cold custard with a chocolate sponge.
Yeah.
I can't get it anywhere.
Yeah.
I loved it.
I'll make you some, Mike. I will make that for you.
All right.
But, you know, so it was nutritionally balanced. They're not getting that now. And so, and also, you know, the NHS is talking about setting up these clinics for children, but have you been into a hospital? Have you seen the food that's on offer in a hospital? So people are going to see sick people, they don't have much time, and all
hospital
you've got is fast
awful,
food. But also, if you want to go and buy something, yeah, if you're in hospital and you want to go downstairs and get something, there is nothing healthy that you can get. It's all fast food and it's all disgusting.
And so they've got those machines with chocolate and crisps.
Chocolate and fizzy drinks, right, which are... Fizzy drinks are the biggest killers in the world. They're the things that
but
are really
horrific. But is it right
horrific
to say, because I was kind of ridiculing this yesterday and you may be making me rethink this thought, but I thought, surely to God, two-year-olds are not obese, are they?
Yes.
Are they?
Yes,
so
they are.
What, but that's the parents' fault, surely.
It is the parents' fault, but let's just take it back a bit. So, you know, the government is constantly ploughing money into things I think are obscene and disgusting.
Yeah.
You know how I feel about track and trace and all this stuff that they've done with COVID, the money they've just blown away for nothing. Mm. Billions, billions. What they could have done and what they need to do is, because there's so much misinformation about what is healthy and what is good for your child.
Mm.
I think the new generations that are coming up don't understand food anymore. Yeah. They don't understand what's good. And there's all these, you know, propaganda and false information. One thing I want to say to all parents out there listening, anything that says it's fortified, don't touch it.
Right.
Because the reason it's fortified is because it's probably absolutely zero nutrients.
And what does that word mean in the food
business? It's when they add vitamins to the food,
okay,
or they add minerals or, you know, calcium or vitamin C and all that stuff. Don't touch it.
Right.
It's empty calories that have been plugged in with
just added
false kind of things that you don't need. Your body might not necessarily absorb properly. Mm. We need to take a step back. We need to give basic cooking lessons and basic nutritional lessons to people so they understand what they're giving their children. Because, you know, you have all these things that say, you know, rich in vitamin C, good for kids, no sugar, but they're not.
No added sugar.
No added sugar. But look at all the extra sugars, the fruit sugars that are in there that are doing exactly the same damage. No wonder a lot of people don't understand what's right to feed their children. So I have great sympathy for that. I'm a nutritionist. I understand it. I get it. It's what I do.
Right.
I read books about it. It's what I'm interested in. And nutrition has changed a lot throughout the years. You know, there was a while back, you know, 25 years ago when it was all about no fat, no fat, because there was a whole lobby that wanted to make fat bad and to increase sugar because the sugar market was giving so much money.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with health.
Right.
So that was a complete corrupt thing that went on there. And now we're kind of reversing back.
Because you know what I find? And I'm going to America at Christmas. I'm sorry to interrupt your flow for a moment. But everything there is sweeter, you know.
Oh.
And my daughter, when she lived in the States, when she would come to London, she would go, you know what I love here is the cheese and the ham. It tastes so fresh and it tastes so great because over in America, it's all kind of pasteurised. It's all been kind of homogenised. The bread is sweet. You know, you can't buy... I mean, you can if you go to a decent sort of, you know, artisan bakery, if you happen to live in a trendy part of New York City. But if you live in the Midwest or something, you know, every piece of bread that you eat has got sugar in it.
It's heavily sugared and heavily salted to make it more addictive.
Right.
The bad food industry should be brought down. Mm. It needs to be brought down, but I think it makes too much money for governments.
Yeah.
If you really, really want to stop children from being sick and you really care about the health of this nation, that's what you target first. You target bad food.
And surely it's easy to teach people how to cook, isn't it?
It's really easy, but it takes time. And it takes also the reversing of all the kind of false information that you've got to start to cook from scratch, a meal from scratch. It does take a little bit of time and a little bit of effort and interest.
Yes.
Because it's much easier to go and buy that already marinated chicken thigh, for example, and
sure.
put it in the oven.
Right.
But actually, that has got about 20 E numbers
yeah,
in it
absolutely.
And lots of horrible things. It will take you literally 3 minutes to marinate it.
And also give people a sense of pride in making something, because
absolutely,
also it's a
yeah.
craft, it's an
it
art
is.
Form. I love cooking.
Yeah.
My kids love cooking. All of them do.
Yeah.
And they're totally into it. And they know that it's better and healthier for them. And things like, I'm just looking it up because I always forget what it's called, but mirepoix, you know, you cut some carrots, some celery, some onions, and that's the basis for almost anything.
Absolutely.
Stew, you know,
whatever
spaghetti,
you're going to put in it, it makes a lovely base, yeah.
And it's really just interesting to do. I mean, if you can make your kids interested enough in doing it.
But unfortunately, say the parents of young children now, their parents never cooked. I knew a young guy who was a friend of my daughter's, so, you know, so they're, he must be about 23 now. And
right.
up until he came to my house, he never ate home-cooked food.
Wow.
He had a chest freezer at home that his mum would fill up once every 2 weeks
okay.
and say, knock yourself out. She decided she hated cooking.
Yeah.
And he didn't know how to cook because he'd never seen anyone cook.
Yeah.
Her mother didn't like cooking or she was a terrible cook and couldn't be bothered. You do have to cook with a little bit of love
yeah.
and put a bit of effort and taste
but
things
also
as you
make
go
it,
along.
But don't make it seem like a dirge or something that you horribly have to do every day. Make it something interesting.
Absolutely. And
right?
I was talking
and
to...
And there's so many great... I mean, the reason you and I met was because of
it's
a,
through
a
food
cookbook.
Yes it's
you
through
did the
food.
Spice cookbook
yeah.
and I said that looks interesting and I looked through it and you came in and here we are you
absolutely.
Know some
food
years
brought
later
us together.
A food brought us together
but the whole thing about food is about eating together and mixing together and it really helps family life and when I was trying to do this thing oh gosh about 15 years ago to just try and get families I wasn't even aiming for one meal a day I was aiming for one meal a week where the family cook together and eat together
yeah.
and that has real positive effects on the whole of the family. It's a time that everyone takes their phones out of the room and actually sits together around a table and you pick up things that are going on in your children's lives. I mean, I try and do that every day. It doesn't always happen
right.
in our house because I've got older
ones.
It's
difficult as they get older.
It is difficult, but it has to happen at least twice a week where we sit and have, or three times a week, we sit and have dinner together, we cook together and we do it all together. And that has positive mental effects on mental health as well. So cooking and food are literally the hub where everything else can flourish and that's been forsaken and no one's putting any effort into teaching these people because you were just talking about making a basic sauce start and there's so many things but people don't know that. I mean for me if I don't know what to cook, do you know what I do? I start frying off some onions and then something will come.
Yeah,
you know, it's that kind
absolutely.
Of thing, you know, it's a base for something and something will come
definitely.
You know, from that. But a lot of people don't understand that. That's why if during lockdown they'd spent some money, I mean, I would have happily have done it for free. I suggest it quite often that I would do free cookery lessons that could be broadcast to the nation, making basic things that you can make.
And you do stuff on Instagram. I told
all the time,
you I learned that thing about the clams from you.
Yes, there you go.
You know, where you put them in the pan before you do anything else. And
if they don't
and
shut.
If they don't
shut when you're washing them and open when you're cooking them.
And when
them.
You don't open when you put them in. You know, I didn't know that. And I consider myself to be relatively clam knowledgeable, but I just think it's so much fun as well.
People say they haven't got time, but what you realise is I agree with that. You have to make time. It does take a little bit of effort, but then once you've got some basic knowledge, you can cook anything you like, and it's fun, and you will enjoy the food better.
Yeah.
It tastes better. But the problem is like you said about America, it's happening here as well. People's taste buds are being desensitized by too much salt, too much sugar, and bad fats,
and so much ease now with which you can literally ring up anywhere and get, you know, Uber Eats.
That's what lockdown did.
You know, all sorts of stuff can get delivered. I mean, people are actually getting... I was in, funnily enough, the day that I did that fry-up, because I was hungover, I was the only person in the actual cafe. Everybody else that came in was delivering something to someone.
Somebody, yeah.
People on scooters. So people are ordering breakfast. They're not even going out to get it.
Yeah.
And you're going, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, that's so wrong.
Take a walk.
But lockdown did that.
Yeah.
The government did that. By locking us down, it did that.
Right.
These obesity problems that we had, them before. It's not anything new, but they have accelerated because of lockdown. Kids sitting, eating takeaway food, eating snacks all the time, not being able to go out and play. The government are to blame.
Yes.
Lockdown is to blame. So hearing Boris talk about maybe having to do some lockdown at Christmas, there's just no way.
No thanks.
Listen, you bungling Boris. It's my new name. For him.
I like that.
There is no way that we will lock down.
No.
I will never do that again. And there is no reason for it.
No.
There is no
there really
reason
isn't.
For it. There's no reason
all
to
right,
justify
now tell
it.
Me about the other thing that happened to you this week, which was that you were abused on social media by another broadcaster from another place. And we're not going to name him because I wouldn't give him the time of day for that. But tell us about that.
So there was a really fantastic young lady talking on another
I saw
news.
Her. I didn't recognise her. I don't know who she was.
Her name has slipped my mind. I will find it. But she was just a young, eloquent girl who was just making the case. She said that she had been double vaccinated. She will have her booster. But she was making the case for people that do not wish to be vaccinated. Yeah. Now, we now know, just to go back to a little bit on the vaccination thing, that vaccines do not stop you from getting or transmitting the disease. Actually, the greatest thing that you can have to prevent you from transmitting the disease is natural immunity, which nobody talks about.
Including Sajid Javid when I asked him.
Exactly, when you asked him, nothing to do. And that is horrifying in itself.
Yeah.
And so she was trying to explain to this particular broadcaster. So I put a tweet up saying, poor this broadcaster, don't you seem to understand that this vaccine does not stop you from contracting or transmitting? The best thing that you can have is natural immunity. Mm. And he just personally attacked me, calling me someone with a little skull, spelt skull wrong, with I can't get into my little skulls, the basic vaccine, which is very nice of you to say. He called me lots of names, but it's really interesting that this man had actually written a book about not shouting at each other and being nice to each other and having a listen, the debate.
The ones, you know, be kind. You swine.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, you don't agree with me. But the thing is, his point of view as well, which was entirely indefensible in my view, was that if you do not want to take the vaccine, that you are somehow a bad person.
I don't understand.
And that you
this.
Should somehow be punished for that because you're not being community minded, right? And instead of understanding that we live in a free society, supposedly, and instead of understanding that everybody has free will, you know, how would he like it if we went back to the days when certain sex acts were banned?
Yeah.
And you go, well, in fact, you're being very irresponsible by doing that because during various outbreaks of disease, you could be irresponsibly spreading something. He wouldn't like that.
He really wouldn't like that. But my point is, and I keep going back to this point, is that it doesn't work. This thing that they think they're doing that's making them better human beings, it doesn't work. It doesn't work as well as natural immunity. And, you know, 20 months down the line or 18, 19 months down the line, we know that we have a huge amount of natural immunity. So you can't keep discarding that and saying, well you're not
Wales.
A good person.
Wales, where they've had effectively Plan B, which is the much bigger lockdown and vaccine passports and all of that. Guess what? Their cases are going up.
Absolutely.
Isn't
and what's happening? What's happening in England?
Cases are not going up.
They're going down. Yeah. So there you go. And I must just add that I will be outside Parliament today at 1 o'clock with the Together...
Good for you.
The Together... declaration.org.
Okay.
If anyone wants to sign it, togetherdeclaration.org, to just talk to our MPs about how illiberal and how very bad vaccine passports are and how they do not help with a virus. They just don't help. How can someone who's been double vaccinated and still get the virus go somewhere by showing their pass, and someone who has natural immunity and is 27 times less likely to get the virus not go in? So that person that's been vaccinated could be going in
and could have
COVID. But the person with the natural immunity who's not been tested for antibodies can go nowhere.
Right.
It's wrong. Yes. It's fundamentally wrong.
And also to accuse people who do not wish to have a vaccine for whatever reason, and there are plenty of reasons why you wouldn't want to have one, including some which are medical.
Yeah.
Why should that person then be sort of singled out as being somehow morally selfish or by somehow doing the wrong thing? Because in my experience, when you start labelling people and making them out to be outlaws, guess what? They become outlaws.
But it's not just that. You know, Mike, I'll go back to it. I was out last night. I was driving home with a very nice lady in the car who then called me an anti-vaxxer and really kind of...
Really?
She went off on one, and I looked at her and I thought, gosh, this poor woman. I actually felt sorry for her, because the government propaganda and the brainwashing that has been done... See, my brain and your brain cannot be brainwashed.
No.
We are critical thinkers, and we look at the facts outside of what we're being... fed.
Right.
So these people that only read the mainstream media and only watch BBC, ITV, mainstream television, they are being literally force-fed this brainwashing. It's called nudge, it's called propaganda, and they have been brainwashed. And I looked at her and she was fearful and she was screechy. And I just thought, I don't know how I can help this woman.
No.
She's so far gone the other way. She doesn't have the mind to be able to critically look at other information, look at the facts and come together and say, you know what, vaccines have worked really well for some people.
And also
really
just be
well,
logical.
Exactly.
Well. Think about what you've just said.
Yeah.
And think about what you're doing. You're sitting in a car with Tonya Buxton, who's not wearing a mask. I don't know if she was wearing a mask.
She wasn't.
But, you know, why is she in the car with you if she's that frightened? Did she really think... I mean, I got on the tube the other day. It was rammed, right? About 50% of the people were not wearing masks. Mm-hmm. Now, I said this to Laura yesterday. If COVID was so dangerous, why has everybody on that train not got it? Yeah. Why has everybody not been given it? Yeah. Why are we not super spreaders? Why is everybody not rushing off to Guy's Hospital because they've been infected by this terrible disease? I'll tell you why. Because nobody now is getting it unless they've got a real serious underlying health issue.
Can you possibly imagine a healthcare system sacking its staff if we really were under this type of threat? I mean, the problems that we have in this country with health are nothing to do with the virus.
No.
They're to do with the overwhelming backlog that we've got.
Yeah.
And the tsunami of undiagnosed cancers that are about to come out will be tens of hundreds of thousands of people. And I want someone to pay for that.
There are people dying in ambulances, right? Yeah. While Sajid Javid's going, so what?
Yeah.
Well, so what, Sajid? Fix the ambulance problem.
He should go.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no
respect. I think
no
it's a shocking way to talk to anybody.
It's a shocking way to talk to your public who have all been put through a horror.
Yeah.
We've had 19 months of horror, non-stop fear and horror, and no real facts. The facts are coming out later. Mm. Just all these facts that are coming out later. One of the things that blows my mind is that really very early on when I put a tweet out, which I took down because I got so frightened, about the virus coming from a lab in Wuhan, China.
Right.
I mean, it seems completely logical to me.
Well, I mean, the American government are now saying that's where it came
from. Well, there's a book coming out now, The Virus, that's coming out now, which has, you know, breaks down all the facts and is a fantastic book. I think it's out next week. And they state that. And the abuse that these people, these scientists have had and these kind of people that have researched it have had by saying that. I got called racist. I got called all this stuff. And I thought, oh, gosh, I took it down because I was so frightened of it. But look, it's true. So we can't believe anything that's said. You know, the government and Twitter and all these people that took me down. They said I was being, they went for me. And it's a fact. So how can you believe anything they say when facts later are coming through that they've said were not facts? And, and all the things that Boris and everyone has said that they weren't going to do and have done them. We were called conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
It's the first time I heard this, you know, this tag. I'd never been called this before COVID. So it's really interesting to be constantly called it. And then all the conspiracies that I said have come true.
Mm.
So what does that? What does that make me? What does that make you?
Clever. Because that's what we are here at the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. Not only are we independent, we're also very clever. And the thing I love most about the fact that we're clever is that people call us stupid.
Yes.
I love that.
I get called stupid all the time.
I love it. They call me thick.
Yeah, I know.
You think I'm thick? Give me a call.
I love that. And I love the fact that anything that you discuss, you have to have a kind of degree on, or you have to be. So since where's Tonya's medical degree?
Yeah,
where's she a virologist?
Yeah.
Where does she
know
about
this? Why are you
talking
to a chef? I get that
Why
all the time.
Oh, God, I get that all the time. Yeah. Like we don't have the capacity to critical think and read things and have opinions. And I think I personally know more about nutrition than any GP.
Yeah.
I can do a sit down with a GP because GPs,
more
what do
people
they get?
Die in hospitals than die in restaurants. Let's put it that
Thank
way.
You very much. Yes.
That's the kind of logic they like.
Yeah, that is.
Anyway, we've got to run because we're late. Tonya, delightful to see you. Go and meet Tonya down at Parliament Square, 1 o'clock, if you wish. She's going to be down there doing what she says on the tin, unlike most people who sit behind their little keyboard and hurl insults at other people and never actually show their faces. She does, and I love her for it.
Thank you.
Is Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, let us talk about something slightly more ethereal. Because there's a new word entering the English language, not as if it's never been there before, but certainly it's become a lot more popular. And that word is perseverance. It's been named as the word of 2021 by dictionary bosses, because it turns out that searches for that word, perseverance, have been the most searched word in the whole course of the year, partly because of NASA's mission to Mars. Let's talk now to David Crystal, author of the Cambridge Encyclopedia of the English Language, because we always like talking about words, because it's what we do. I've always asked people to tell me how many words I uttered during the course of a three-hour radio show. I'm not sure what it is, that number, but I don't think I've said perseverance yet until now. So, David, very good afternoon to you.
Well, good afternoon to you. Quite a large number of words, I would say, at the rate you speak.
Well, I would imagine so. I would like to know, actually. I should have somebody. I'm sure there's a device that could count them. But I myself have not said perseverance an awful lot this year. But it's interesting that that this word has been picked out just because it's been based on all the searches that were done for it.
Yes, that's one of the ways in which people do this word of the year thing. It's
right.
November. It's word of the year month. I mean, lots of dictionaries are now doing this. And what's happened with Cambridge is that they've used this technique of the number of times that people have looked it up, which is one way of doing it. Well, all that shows is that there are quite a large number of people out there that don't know what the meaning of perseverance is.
Right. Well, no, I mean, one of my favourite films is a film called The Outlaw Josie Wales with Clint Eastwood, in which he's a sort of, you know, he's fighting against the Red Legs in the Civil War in America. And he has a Native American sort of friend that comes with him. And he talks about how they were all called to the White House one day. And this is one of my favourite phrases, which means absolutely nothing. He says, "We met the president," who I think was Jackson, and he went up to them. He said, "They gave us all a medal, told us we were doing very well, and said, 'Endeavour to persevere.'" and that was the advice. And it's a great phrase because it means absolutely nothing, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Now, what one has to do is realise that there isn't any one perfect word of the year. You know, this latest one has just come out now that you're talking about. But a couple of weeks ago, Oxford came up with another word of the year. And that was based on a very different procedure. This was actually looking through as many sources as possible to see which words were actually coming up more frequently than last year.
Right.
In all sorts of contexts, you know, newspapers, magazines, online, everywhere. And the word that they came up with was vax.
Oh, really? Yes. Yeah. Interesting, because that's become a word now, hasn't it? V-A-X-X rather than vaccine.
Well, that's right. Vax with one X if it's just on its own, and if you've been vaxed, you put two X's together. Right. Now, heck, that's unusual, isn't it? How many words in the language have two X's?
Well,
going
I mean,
together?
Normally that's reserved for people who sort of perform rap music and they give themselves strange names with lots of strange consonants in them. But what about anti-vax? Is that in there as well?
Well, it's not been a word of the year, but I suppose it could be just as easily. Different parts of the world have different things, you know. I was reading the other day that in Australia, their word of the year is completely different from anything else. They've got this lovely coinage. The word of the year from the National Dictionary Centre there was, are you ready for it?
Go on.
Stroll out.
Stroll out? Is that something to do with the lockdown?
What that means is that there's been a slowing down of the rollout of the vaccine.
Right.
Hence, stroll
out. Interesting. Because you would expect in Australia, because they've had such a terrible lockdown, that there would be something lockdown related as well, wouldn't you?
Well, yes, you would. But you see, don't forget that the pandemic's been around a while now.
Yes.
And so last year's words of the year captured the obvious ones. So last year, for instance, Merriam-Webster over in the United States chose, obviously, pandemic.
Mm.
And the Collins Dictionary people last year chose, obviously, lockdown. So, I mean, those kind of basic words have already been done, you know, a year ago.
And do you do the reverse of adding words to dictionaries? Do you ever take words out which are no longer sort of in use?
Oh, the smaller dictionaries do all the time, because they haven't got the space. You know, new words are coming in, so the old words go out. But these days, you know, online dictionaries don't have a problem with space.
Sure.
And so it's very unusual now to find a word actually being dismissed from the dictionary. Very unusual.
Interesting, because I'm looking at a story that was written about this today, in which they said in January of this year, and I assume this is more American than British, lots of words were based around what happened on January the 6th, insurrection, impeachment, inauguration, and acquit were all very heavily sort of searched for.
Yeah, that's right. And these are the words that will sometimes also develop a slightly different sense, you know, one that wasn't quite there before with quite the same nuance. You know, things like in the Black Lives Matter kind of domain, anything to do with race or gender,
Yes. Then
these are likely to develop new senses that weren't there before.
Ah. And what about sort of new words that are invented sort of by teenagers? Because I always hear from my children different words that mean different things. This is probably very old now, but I remember the first time I heard the word sick referred to as something good.
Yes.
You know, which
that's wicked.
Mint, I'm told mint is one that people use a lot now. For good.
Yeah, well, this is new slang, and the chief reason for slang is to show that you're one of the gang, you know, that's the old phrase, and this is always happening. The new slang words come in every year. Now, Here's the interesting point. How many of those actually become a permanent place in the language? And the answer is, judging by studies that have been done in the past, only about a quarter of them will ever actually be around in, say, 10 years' time.
Yes. Well, because presumably if somebody like me starts using them, they're no longer valid because I'm far too old to be using slang terms that my teenage sons would use.
Absolutely. Dead boring. As soon as old people use young people. Oh, I say old.
Yes.
I mean, I'm
no, listen,
slightly
I'm,
less
I'm
young.
More than happy for you to call me old. It's absolutely fine. I mean, it's a bit like when I was a bit younger, by the time a trendy night nightclub was letting the likes of me in. It wasn't trendy anymore.
Yeah, that's what happened to Bling, you know.
Yes, Bling, that's a good word that we haven't seen for a while.
Yeah, but once again, it was a very narrow, specialised, slangy term.
Right.
And then, you know, upper-class people started to use it, and so the cool guys that were using it stopped using it.
Yeah, amazing. So, I mean, is there any way to sort of track the way language is going? Because I'm fascinated by language, as you would imagine, and I always like to know sort of if there is any kind of cultural changes or differences that we bring in, perhaps because we've imported words from overseas or from different parts of the world. You know, I mean, it's just a constantly movable feast, really, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. And fortunately, thanks to online, it is not so hard to monitor these changes now. Mm. Now, Cambridge have come up with this word today that we're talking about, perseverance, and Oxford the other day did vax. Well, if you go to either of their sites, you know, the Cambridge one or the Oxford one, and some of the other dictionaries do it as well, every month in some cases, and certainly every 3 months, you'll get an outpouring of, you know, the latest words and the latest meanings that have come in. So it's the easiest way to do it.
Okay. Well, we shall keep an eye on it. David, thank you very much indeed. Great to talk to you. Very fascinating stuff. Author of the Cambridge Encyclopedia of the English Language, David Crystal there. And, of course, that's another word. If you're a fan of movies, you'll remember from A Few Good Men, where Jack Nicholson, while he's sitting on the stand, says to Tom Cruise, "Are we clear?" Tom Cruise says, "Crystal."
Talk Radio across the UK, online, on DAB and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.